Optic's problem hasn't been playing against the bottom eight teams. It's been what happens when they match up with the top four.
I don't think they're a team that are scared to take risks.
I think the top four teams this stage have been like far and away like the biggest gap we've seen in a while.
Hello there, guys, and welcome back to Reverse Sweep presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com/reverse sweep and use code Reverse Sweep for a first deposit match of up to $100. As always, I'm joined today by Patty P and retired raver Chris Parasite Duarte.
This weekend, retired raver.
Well, he's not retired because he's going next weekend. But anyway, this weekend's matches absolutely flew in, and we saw six out of the eight matches resulting in a 3-0 victory. But now things are beginning to shape up as we're heading into the Miami Major in a couple of weeks' time. But before we get into the show, I want to say thank you all for putting your questions in the comments. We made a big push for that last week and you guys delivered. So today we're going to spend a little bit more time answering some of your questions after the weekend's biggest talking points. So right away, we're going to get into it. And the first topic I have here is Thieves, great S&D, playing against Minnesota, who have been looking absolutely dog shit. And we're seeing another Game 5 loss from Minnesota. What's your guys' thoughts? What's going wrong with Minnesota and their inability to close out in those Game 5s? And what is going right or wrong in the Thieves camp as well? Because they're obviously going the distance in a lot of these series where they could close it out earlier. But still, two victories on the board for them. And I think it's been a slight improvement from their performances from the previous stage.
I think Minnesota are just regressing. I feel like they started off this stage strong. They looked really good against some of the better teams they played, and they failed to close out a lot of those victories, which when we talked about it, like they should have won versus like Toronto. Potentially they should have probably beat at like all the other teams they played, but lately now they're just getting worse. They can't close game fives. Their map pool is starting to get exposed and teams are taking advantage of it. Obviously, we saw the Thieves ended up closing out a map five versus them. But the Thieves also, they've been looking a lot better. They're not playing the best of competition yet. So we'll still wait to see how they fare up against FaZe next weekend. However, good signs for the Thieves camp finally, because they were struggling very, very for a very long time up until basically this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have always thought this way about the Rocker. Obviously, I know they came into Major 1 and got a, you know, a decent placing, but if you remember, like, those guys started horribly in the beginning of the season, and then they hit like a little 3-win streak, and then they, you know, obviously the event went down, they beat York in that weird series, ended up getting 5th-6, but Mark, they remind me of the Seattle Surge from last year. They're just a streaky team. They're kind of on a roller coaster. They have their little win streaks and their loss streaks, but I mean, this team has negative ice. To lose that many game fives in the way that they've done, I mean, even today, like Lamar, you probably got the best series out of Lamar you could possibly get, and they couldn't clutch up. For me, this team is just due for a roster change. I've been saying it, like, I don't know if it's Awakening or just his play style on this team, but he doesn't work for me. I think, you know, For Rocker, you know, I think they have the ability to be on the cusp of like that 5th-6. And it's going to require a roster change if they want to be there consistently. There's too many teams improving, like Chris said, while they're regressing. And I think they're limited with the, you know, roles they have right now. Awakening in previous Call of Duties has been like the kill whore main slayer. And I mean, now we're begging him to kill whore and he can't seem to get kills. So for me, I mean, he just can't consistently be having this many bad maps and bad series because this team needs slaying power. The fact that they're even pushing it to game five half the time is like, you know, what's going wrong? So, I just think Awakening is his time. I think he could be solid on another team, but I think his time on the Rockers should be over.
Who would you put in if you had to, like, looking at challengers or other players that potentially could get traded? More than likely a challengers player, I'd say, but who would you guys think about as a replacement for Wake?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, to be honest, I think this is going to come down to like a Lamar comfort pick, like when I think about it, because I mean, Chris, you've talked about this before, like, do you think Awakening is playing the way that Lamar wants him to play? I kind of feel like the role they would pick up would be someone that Lamar would like or get along with or like agree on how to play Call of Duty.
I wonder how their scrims go, because I remember Boston Breach with Wake and Vivid. being one of the better scrim teams, everyone would say, and they just didn't perform in matches. And I wonder if their scrims are going similarly, where they're playing pretty good in scrims, and maybe Wake is playing better in those, but he's not able to transition that into matches. So that might be like keeping him on the roster, right? Where it's like, yo, he's like, he does good in practice. Like, we're like, we have a system, like, we're not bad, like, but 90% of the time. But then you get to that 1% where they're playing a match and he's just not playing well. So I wonder if that's even a thing. But in terms of who they pick up, I really don't know where they would go in terms of like anybody that's notable that we know of. In terms of people outside of the league and maybe some newcomers that haven't gotten a chance, a name that really stands out here is Lunars. Lunars is a part of the FaZe Black Academy team. He was previously on a team that I believe was with Eric Boom and Cruz and Gunsy, and they placed third at the first major of challengers. So, and I know that kid as a playstyle. He is like a slay heavy AR. So maybe they try to look into challengers and get a player there. In terms of anybody else, I mean, Standy, he's a sub player. Illy, we don't know what the hell is going on with that guy. I can't really think of
Illy would AR. Probably be the best one they could pick up if they could pick him up.
Hypothetically, yeah. If they could, yeah, and Illy played as at least up to the standard that he did in his previous team, yeah, it'd probably be a good pickup. But I probably would willing to bet that they probably go to the challengers route and they pick up a player like Lunars. Or maybe if they're really feeling like investing in that whole, like, the French community, right, with Linz on the team, maybe he has some influence there. I think he maybe gives a shout to Cobra. I think Cobra wasn't. Is Cobra an AR player, Mark? I know you're in the EU scene. So, yeah, he's an AR player, and I think he's been playing pretty good in the elite statistically, if I read those correctly. So maybe there's also a shout to him. But yeah, those are two names that definitely stand out right now on my radar.
Anyone else on that original FaZe Black squad? Like Exceed still in challengers.
Brack.
Brack.
But Brack is like not. Brack's more like Lamar's playstyle, and I don't know if he'd fit on that team. Maybe Beans could also be in there. I think Beans is also like kind of like a slay heavy AR, but I truthfully don't know. Yeah,
don't take it. No, kidding on. Obviously, I would want my players to be in the league, of course. But I think that there's very few out there that are not kind of like already like we know what to expect from them, sort of thing. Are they going to go down the route of going with like a Lunars who's maybe not had his opportunity yet, or do they go down the route of, I mean, looking at the elite? You have like the NA teams, you have Boston Academy and Space Fish Taco in the winners finals, yeah. Which is like, so like the AR players that would kind of fit in that mold alongside Lamar would be like Cammy. Sam Welly.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's like the route they go
Space
down.
Space Fish Taco is there are a couple of my buddies and they've been actually showing out. I'm pretty proud of them. But obviously with the elite and stuff like that, I think if teams are going to invest now before the major, they would probably look at prior land placements over the current elite standings. But if they were looking at, you know, they might wait, right? We might see Rocker stick it out, go to the major, and then there's going to be another challenger tournament and then see who goes from there, because there could be some more standout players making a name for themselves. Obviously, Space Fish Taco being a team that was relatively unknown to most people with players like Sam Welly, Pro MR, Exotic, and who's their fourth? Deceptions on their team. Yeah.
I'd be mind blown if they stuck it out. I mean, they
exactly. I would now, be like, too, but like it's kind of like there's what one or two? Is there two more weekends of matches? I think there's one or two more weekends of matches before the majors. So
there's two more. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. They don't have a lot of time, but usually that's kind of how it goes. Usually teams wait until, you know, the major's over before they make the changes, which I hate. I know you hate it too, Pat, like especially if there's a clear upgrade path and they're not taking it. So I don't know.
Yeah. A team that did play pretty well this week, and a player I want to give a massive shout out to, actually, Shotzi. So I've kind of been hard on him as well in terms of like the way he's been performing, just the mistakes he's making and whatnot. But I mean, he drops the kill record in the match against Carolina, drops 99 kills in 4 maps. I mean, he was doing it all. I think that Rio getting brought in is obviously like a big benefit to them as well. What's your thoughts overall on like Optic and like where their trajectory is going towards Miami?
I'll say my take first, because I know Pat will probably have a differing one, but I think the way they've been playing the stage is good signs for them, and the introduction of Rio has done them nothing short of favors. So I'm pretty happy about that. If you're a Green Wall fan, you should be too. Shotzi's actually playing well. Like, even if it is against the bottom teams, I think he hasn't had the best streak of matches prior to these last couple of weekends. So good signs for him. I think the rest of the team is playing, you know, doing whatever they need to do. But this team, I think, has improved. Maybe it's just due to the new map. And I still think there's still definitely weaknesses in that camp. I think they need to iron out their control and their search. And their hardpoint looks pretty good, barring their first map starts against a couple of series. But I mean, my test is really going to be against Toronto. They play Toronto the final match of Sunday coming up on this weekend. And that is going to be their time to kind of like prove it. It's like, okay, you're able to bully these teams. You're not going to any more random game fives.
And they right? play New York.
Oh, they also play New York. Wow. So they actually have Austin, a big Toronto, weekend ahead of them. Yeah, this is going to be an amazing weekend because it's obviously going to show us what these guys really got, but it's also getting really close to the majors. So these matches, they're getting important because if they can win one, maybe even two, both of these matches, it's going to do a lot for their confidence. But I do like the fact that Shotzi's been playing better. I don't feel like he's throwing his life away. But when it comes to these top teams, I still worry because those teams are able to put you in a box. And he needs to find a way to get out of it. Otherwise, he's going to continue to struggle like he has so far.
Yeah, so for me, teams. I mean, look, another player who's in the same boat is Hydra. You know, he's stepped it up. He's been frying. But we really got to look at the strength of schedule here. I mean, obviously, Optic as a team, they've been playing a lot better. But they've also only played the bottom four teams. They played Carolina. They played LAG. They played Rocker and LAT. Like, they've gotten... So far, the perfect run of teams to match up against. Obviously, you know, those teams I would consider like the newbier teams. So like players who are very skilled, like Shotzi is. It's kind of like a noob slaying type of thing. The kill record's cool. I will say, though, and I don't know why this wasn't mentioned. The kill record was broken on Rio, which is a new map. And so like that kind of sets a new pace for the amount of kills because... The other maps did not have nearly as many engagements as Rio does in Hardpoint. True. So, like, yes, he broke the kill record, but that kill record was dated because it wasn't including Rio. So I would expect that to probably get broken again in the future just because that map is nonstop action. Yeah. But, yeah, Optics look better. Again, the real test is going to be the next 2 weekends when they match up against Toronto and New York because... Optic's problem hasn't been playing against the bottom eight teams. It's been what happens when they match up with the top four. And so, yeah, I mean, like, that's to Chris's point. The top four is a lot harder to play against, especially in these sub roles. Shotzi is not the only one. I would say the only star SMG player that has had success has been Kleenex. Even the others have really struggled. Again, within these top four matchups, and that, you know, that plays a lot of factors. The maps are very different. You can't make as many plays. The teams are a lot better. They do really have, you know, dominate map control, and you can't just like hit these super fast playmaking plays. I think that's why Kleenex has been so impressive for me. We're talking about the true sub players, so still more to see for me, but I mean, yeah, you can't deny the positive uptrend,
especially if you don't get Rio in a series, right? Like, Rio is a map that I don't think a lot of teams will play Optic on or FaZe or Toronto on. Them. Yeah, I don't think they'll play it either. I think maybe FaZe plays it against them, but I don't really see any other team scoring up on a Rio hardpoint with the likes of Optic. So as much as that map is a good sign for their map pool, it's probably going to get vetoed out in most of their series.
Yeah, I think Optic need to go in those two matchups against New York and Toronto. I think they need to take one win there. I think they need to have that confidence that they can beat these top teams going into the major, and if they don't have that still, I still think it's going to be a struggle for them to win anything. Even though it's an online match, I still think it's kind of getting over that hump that they've had with the other top teams. But yeah, I think that Optic overall, like you said, still need to focus on improving S&D. I've been saying it all season. I think that they're of course always going to be a good respawn team. But I think going into this major, they better be playing S&D like as much as physically possible, and just getting the reps in and trying to improve that way, because I think that that is going to be their area. If they're able to compete with the likes of New York, Toronto, etc., they need to be taking S&Ds. They're not going to be able to get through by winning all the respawns, unfortunately, against those teams. So yeah, interesting to see how Optic play at the major itself and over the next couple of weeks. Another team that I think has improved has been Vegas. And I'd probably say, I don't know if you guys agree, they're probably the most improved out of the teams that made roster changes. Yeah, I think that they are definitely a team that has surprised a lot of people, to be honest. I've heard behind the scenes that they're doing really well in practice. Obviously, they're picking up wins and they're in a situation now where they can potentially have a really good stage and put themselves... I think that's the thing as well with these teams like Vegas. A lot of the time, they're just happy to get into the winner's bracket, like historically. But if they're able to come in and not have that hard matchup round one, if they go like, you know, 6-0 or something along those lines, and they're playing against one of those other weaker winners bracket teams round one, they can potentially, you know, push into the top six, push into the top four at the event itself. So,
which would be absolutely massive for them. And they're in a strong position to do so. I mean, their schedule is one of the easiest, if not the easiest. But the thing is about Vegas, where you still have to give them credit, is because they're beating them. It's not like, regardless if they have an easy schedule and they're playing the teams at their level or below, they are beating these teams and they are handling them pretty well. And when they do play against some of the top four teams, they do have some maps that are winnable. They even 6-0'd Toronto on a Rio S&D, which we just saw them go 6-5 against. Was it Vegas that 6-0'd them? I could be wrong.
Yeah, on Rio. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rio,
yeah. I'm trying to remember if it was Miami or not. But anyways, yeah. So they've been looking good, man. Like, they've improved. They're beating all the teams that are underneath or at the same level, and they might continue to do so here. We still got 2 weekends left, so still a lot of COD to be played. But these guys are putting themselves in a strong position, and I got to tip it, man. Geo's made an amazing impact, but also I think the thing that's made them a lot better than they are, at least at all the remaining modes, barring Hardpoint, because I still see Purge throwing some sneakers, is Purge. He swapped to a sub, and he's looked better. I'm not going to say he's a star or he's going off because he's dropping 1.0s and still sometimes has least damage in the lobby. But he's made their team a lot better by role swapping, because prior to that, they were abysmal. And then on top of that, you're getting the best out of Nero, the most consistent Nero we have ever seen. And I was always a big, big Nero fan. I said that guy has insane potential in his role. He just needs to find some sort of consistency in his aggression, because that's kind of what he is known for. And he's starting to find it with this team. He's playing so much better. He's always putting up high damage, high engagements, and you're not really necessarily seeing him throw his life away and cost his team as much as he used to. So amazing stuff out of Vegas. Very happy for him.
For me, there was one group that improved more than Vegas. You guys know who that is?
Who's that?
The reverse sweep comment section, because I was
yes,
and there was some good questions, and we're going to get to the questions later. But before we do that, the one area we still need to improve is to like the video and subscribe to the channel, so you never miss anything of our reverse sweep content. We love the questions we got. We'll jump to them later, but I just wanted to give a shout out and make sure you guys are liking and subscribing to the channel. But for me, Chris, the story for me has been Nero and Attach. Those guys are playing at an insane level, super consistent. And I think Geo's came in and done solid, but I'm still worried about this squad, Chris, because I know you mentioned it, like, Purge right now is a massive liability in Hardpoint. He is better, much better comparatively in S&D and Control, but my fear is that they're just capped, right? They have a set ceiling because of that. And I like the move they made with Geo, but I feel that they need to make another if they really want to take that next step. And I mean, I think they're not going to do it for Major 2, obviously, but Chris, do you see a world where they have a solid online Major 2, they go to the event, they don't do well, Purge plays bad, and then they actually make that roster change? Because he is running a sub now, and I think there are subs in Challengers that are just better. And
the problem here, though, is unless they go out and just get shit on, I don't know if they will make a change for him, regardless if they have like a good performance, they get like a top 6 or better, they're not changing. But if they get like top 8 or below for their standards, maybe they consider changing. The problem is, though, you've heard it in their interviews, you even said Purge mentioned it, he's a lot of their IGL. Like, apparently he's one of the people that is helping micromanage the troops, same with Attach. And although, like, I'm not a fan of like having set IGLs and stuff like that, when you're a bottom team, right, it kind of makes sense that's like a thing that happens where there's people
that
are better.
Is gone.
Like, when it comes to the top teams,
like Rambo Ray, 100% IGL, bad, like not putting up the stats, like that role got eliminated in the CEO.
When it comes to the top teams, When it comes to the top teams, I agree. But when it comes to the lower tier teams, there is a lot of people that still need to be babied. It's sad, but it's true. There's a lot of people that still need to be babied. Pat, you put out a whole thing on the flank about people not being able to call out in gunfights. Like, that is still a thing. People sometimes cannot make this clear-cut decisions for themselves. A lot of people get tunnel vision when they're playing, especially against harder competition. And those players are kind of necessary for some of these teams to even have any sort of success. And that could be a case for Vegas. But if they do go to the event and they just get shit on and Purge is just getting world-starred again, then they'll probably make a change. I don't really see a world where they keep him if he continues to do so. But for now, good signs out of Vegas. We'll see how it, you know, they finish out the stage and then obviously go into the major.
Yeah. FaZe as well. FaZe and Ultra had a crazy matchup in the last day of matches here today. We had 3-0 going in favor of FaZe as well, which was completely unexpected. I think we all predicted the Ultra victory there, right? In our predictions last week. Yeah.
I mean,
so we were wrong.
You bet against Ultra with the streak they're on, regardless, unless you're Pat.
Yeah.
And Pat just reads everything that's going to happen because he has the script.
I predicted there was a few reasons for this. I actually foresaw because we brought it up on the flank, like, I think Toronto, Mark, is in a position where they think they're better. They know they're better than FaZe. And if you look at the map veto, like, they gave them all maps FaZe could have asked for. And likely the maps that Toronto is going to end up vetoing against FaZe if they match up at this next major on land. So, I mean, it was weird. You could tell by the body language, like Scrap and Insight, they were spinning fidget spinners on their nose during the break. I'm kind of interested by this because I think it's going to lead to a really fun series if they match up at this next event. I'm trying to not take too much away from this online series. It is nice to see FaZe kind of, you know, protect their record, right? They had like the 13 record in Cold War. Toronto was on pace to break that. And also, if you saw, like, Draza tweeted out before they were gonna play, like, the day before, he's like, "I'll show you who God is," or whatever he said. And he came in and he fried. He played insane. So I'm hoping this adds up to a little storylines for the major. But I just think FaZe played well, and Toronto just gave them their best maps. And I'm kind of curious of the long game and maybe the mental game that went into that.
It's got to be a long game. Like, usually I'm not a believer in teams doing that, but like, those vetoes actually made zero sense and are so uncharacteristic of the Toronto camp to like do that in a match that they think matters to them. So like, there is potential there for Toronto saying, "You know what? We'll give you your best maps. We won't even pick ours. Let's see if we can beat you on them, because that's going to, one, further demoralize you if we can. And secondly, we don't give you any reps. We don't give you any VOD on any of the maps that we're good at or will potentially actually play you on. So they can keep their strats. They can keep their breakoffs. They
especially,
can keep
real match VOD.
Everything they want.
VOD in the real game, yeah.
Everything, every look they want to throw at you at a major, they can keep it in their back pocket. Like I said, usually I'm not a believer in that, but with the way the fucking vetoes worked, I was just like, these are all of FaZe's best maps. Like, how are they even playing this?
They did it for Major 1 as well against Boston, if you remember. They played, like, their worst maps. They played Terminal Hardpoint, which was, like, their auto-veto. So I don't think they're a team that are scared to take risks when it comes to the vetoes, or, like, not risks per se, but, like, they know they're making champs. They know that they're going to be one of the contending teams at each and every tournament. They're going to be willing to do those sort of, like, mind game things.
I think that happens, though, Mark, because with how the league is, it doesn't matter what your seed is going into the major, right? Like, 1-4 is all the same.
Yeah.
There really is no advantage. Because we would argue that, like, you know, let's say Toronto gets fourth. It doesn't matter 1-4 because they're expecting all the four top teams are basically on the same level, and they're not going to match up round one. So they're all feeling very safe with that. Like, there's a stat where the top four is, like, 16-2. In so far in Major 2, and they've only lost to other top four teams, and then like everyone else is like 9-20 something. So it's like they know for a fact they're not going to play round one against any of those top guys, so why not take risk in something where they know they're going to qualify in a top four seed for the event.
That gamble only doesn't pay off if they do lose to like a team they're not supposed to lose to.
But do you guys see that happening for Toronto and FaZe? No. Like,
not at this stage. I think the top four teams this stage have been like far and away like the biggest gap we've seen in a while. Like the maps versus these teams are not even close. Like The only ones you could say maybe are Optic because they'll like go down a map. And then obviously they had that one series where they like got Kentucky fried but still won. But like outside of that, like New York battering everyone, Toronto battering everyone. Same with FaZe. It's not even fucking close.
Yeah, I think the CDL as a whole right now is probably the at a weird spot where the gap between the top teams, we've been saying it all season, but like the gap is probably the biggest it's ever been. I think about it. Like I can't remember any point in time in the last couple of years where we've been in this situation where these matches are almost like FaZe a full-blown conclusion.
FaZe also did lose a series, I think, as well. So I can't just say Optic is the only one because FaZe. Who did FaZe lose to?
New York.
It was New York. Yeah,
that's what I was saying.
Which is, like, again, it's a top four match. Yeah. So yeah, never mind.
The top four hasn't lost outside of the top four.
Yeah.
That's the stat. Yeah.
That's true.
And that's crazy. I mean, some of those sort of bottom four teams that we're talking about as well, like the likes of Miami, who are heading into their own home major, looking like the worst team in the league.
Wow, that's got to feel terrible.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm pretty sure I could be wrong. I can't remember a team starting in loser's bracket at their home event.
Rocker did it, I think.
Did they?
Boston did as well.
Boston did it last event. Yeah, Boston did it. They got 12th.
Yeah. Oh, did they? Oh, yeah, sure. I'm talking rubbish.
Austin had a 1.35 and they lost.
Isn't there going to be a major in Carolina too? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
These teams are all just starting in losers.
It's major three, I think. Miami, Carolina.
The thing is, we can say they're going to start in losers. I mean, there's definitely a couple teams that are like 100%. Like Miami, like they're definitely not, but like Carolina still have a shot. I mean, like, there's a world where these teams
winners.
There's a world where these teams go like 2-5 and they're making winners, I think. Like, there's actually a world where this is happening because of how stacked the top is.
I don't think so.
Maybe 2-5 is a stretch, but I think you're understanding my point, right?
I'm sort of understanding, but you're also speaking a little gibberish like Mark. But something we can easily understand is our prize picks. Prize picks is really simple to play. I can make these picks and submit them in less than 60 seconds. Unfortunately, we did end up losing this past week. Simp, absolutely world starred as we predicted. Again, we bet less on Awakening, but this guy is just an anomaly. He'll get shit on and then randomly have a pop-off series. So he ended up going more. Same for Insight, which is pretty close. And then Brezzy, we called that projection right. We got him less.
I was not a part of these. Y'all did these without me. I wasn't here last weekend, so I take zero.
Such a
zero
fault.
Responsibility.
Do you disagree with anything we took? Would you disagree with any of these picks?
Probably the Jamie Insight less, because he was playing Seattle.
The series was going to be so fast and such a blowout that that was our thinking. Same with the Rocker series versus FaZe.
Yeah. We're thinking there's no way that he's going to be getting enough interactions to be able
but
to
I think
go
the problem
over.
Was the control went deep, and that's always the concern, right? The control goes deep and then they get a lot of kills, but they obviously lost the series. So those were our picks. We're gonna jump to next week now. It looks like Friday, March 8th, we got the Optic Texas against Boston Breach, Atlanta FaZe against the LA Thieves, and then the Carolina Royal Ravens against the Los Angeles Gorillas. What are we thinking? Mark, I said you said we might want to take two picks instead of three or four.
Yeah, I think we slow down a little bit. I'm liking Shotzi more in this first matchup. I really am. I'm high on the on Shotzi after his last match. What's your thoughts?
It's a good team, I think, to do it against the Breach. I guess the question is, do we think there could be a Rio? Do you think Breach lets a Rio through?
No, they haven't played it.
Yeah, well,
does that affect your choice, Mark? Because I think the Rio would be the lock there.
Yeah, but will we see some Karachi action potentially? So let me just check the records real quick.
I think both teams do play Karachi.
We could see some Karachi action. So
sub base.
I think we'll see it. I think we'll see Invasion or like a sub base for sure. I think Invasion and Karachi are both of Optic or maps that Optic is content on playing. I haven't seen them play sub base in a while. And then that is also two map picks for Boston. So I do see a world where Rio gets out and then it's just a choice of whether Optic wants to play Boston on either Invasion or Karachi, because those are maps that 100% will get in, and then they'll have their choice between Subbase and then the other two. So I don't know. I don't. If they get a Karachi, man, I think Amor would be fine.
And remember, we don't have to pick from this series.
Yeah,
right?
We don't have to.
Three series. So let's
look at the other ones. All right.
Yeah, let's go forward.
Thieves versus Atlanta.
I'm liking Draza here. I'm liking Draza coming in hot on the Moor.
No simp. He had 20 more last
year. Yeah, but I'm going for the redemption, like, you know, he left LAT cheese, you know what I mean? The rematch.
I don't know. I think for the most part, Dan has been playing really well in the AR category. And then I think Nasty, at the very least, he's been putting up a lot of damage. So he's been getting involved a lot. I think this falls on the subs. And I think we probably go for an SMG here, because I feel like it's just going to be a mismatch, like Afro and Kremp versus Simp and Abizi. Matchup-wise, we'll probably see Invasion Karachi again, unless like FaZe want to play like a random sub-base. Rio's getting vetoed. And then Invasion is obviously a map that is going to be there unless it gets vetoed. But I think FaZe also plays it.
I'm feeling a Nasty less.
I'm down with that.
I wouldn't be opposed to that.
He hasn't been getting a lot of kills. He's been putting up a lot of damage, but he can't finish one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm down for that, to be honest with you. But I also am down for Draza as well. But Draza on the Moor, but
well, you said we're only going two. You gotta think the Royal Ravens against the LA Gorillas. I'm all over the fellow less. I'm all about the fellow less.
The fellow less
I've seen so far.
The fellow less has gotta be clear cut.
Like, I don't know what's going on with him. His land online performance is drastically different, and he has not been having a good...
I mean, it's either a fellow less or an assault less.
I mean, Assault or Diamond Con, they've both been pretty rough lately.
Assault will randomly have a good series, though. And Diamond's more prone to having good series, so I wouldn't go for him. So it's either Diamond
like
or Fellow.
I plays good against other good ARs sometimes, though. Like the Clay, you know, like the good AR cheese, like he's going up against Clayster.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm thinking, though, just looking at these three matches, I think we've already spoke about it, but I'm thinking the best two choices are Fellow less and Simp or Abizi more. One of those two. I think that's my pick.
It's Simp for me.
It's got to be Simp for me if we're picking the submachine gun player.
Yeah.
Simp or Fellow less?
I'm down for that.
Alrighty, we'll lock that in. For next week, we got Simp more and Fellow less. Remember, Prize Picks has quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, an enormous selection of players and stat types, and that's what makes Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Go to prizepicks.com/reversesweep and use code reversesweep for a first deposit match up to $100.
And now we're going to get into the community questions, guys. So we spoke about this at the top. You guys put in some great questions, and make sure you continue to do that. So we thought we'd give it back a little bit and go through a lot of your questions today and use the majority of the show to do that. So the first question we have here is, for each of you, what was your favorite SMG to use and favorite AR to use based off how much you enjoyed it yourself? I'll go first, and I'll just say my favorite SMG was probably the MSMC on BO2, and then my favorite AR was probably the BAL on AW. That's my top two.
It's a sleeper.
Mine is probably the AK-74U in COD 4. If you guys were old heads, that was a fun gun. You felt powerful with that gun in your hand, right? And then AR, I want to say the BO3 M8. I don't know why that gun felt good. Like, it just felt so satisfying when you hit a one burst. It just sounded good. Like, I don't know. It's a really good AR.
Man, this is tough. I'm going to go with something you won't expect, but it's absolutely true. The Type 100 in World at War.
Wow, I remember that one.
That SMG was elite.
Wait, the PPSH was so fun to use in that game, too.
Yeah. Dude, World at War had insane weapon balance. Like, every gun was good.
The Thompson?
They were so fun to use.
Thompson
was usable? Yeah, that's true.
MP3 was OP, but Thompson was a blast. AR? I'm gonna have to go with the COD 4 AK, the gold AK. Like, you couldn't go wrong with the COD 4 AK.
That was a fun
AK.
Gun to use, bro. Yeah. One gun I want to give a shout out to, like a bonus, is the STG in World War II. The STG Ooh. Meta was fun.
I will
when
say,
the bar came in, it was so miserable.
I will say the STG in World at War sounded better and looked cooler.
It did sound good. It sounded like a typewriter.
Yeah, in World War. Yeah, in World at War. Yeah. But yeah. Good question. That took down memory lane.
Yeah, no, 100%. I like the World at War picks. I used to love that game. So
that game was so much fun. It was like rough for competitive.
Yeah,
it wasn't supported, but like map gen, just that game was just the ultimate pub fun game. I still stand by that.
100%. And the next question is more of a statement, but it's from T Dunk, and I think it's in reference to our tier list last week. But he said, "Remember when Aix used to say, just look at the standings. One team is 30 points ahead, yet they're placed fourth." So I think he's in reference to us having New York above Optic, I believe, in last week's tier list.
Well, for ours, we weren't necessarily going off the amount of points. We were going off the win-loss. And so if you do reference the standings, right now, Ultra's 14-2. FaZe is 13-3, Optics 11-5, and New York is 11-3 with a better game win percentage. So we were going off that. You know, the points are kind of irrelevant because one event is going to sway the points heavily. Like, the points will matter more at the end of the year. But right now, what every team has is the match wins, match losses, and our top four is obviously very clearly defined because everyone else outside of those top four are double negative. Like, they're, you know, 5-11, 6-9, 5-8. But New York has a better match win percentage than Optic Texas, a better game win percentage.
And we also cannot, and then New York has beat Optic online. Granted, it's online, yeah. Right? People
and
literally
phase,
like, at the end of the day, bro, like, we can't predict a team that is a top four seed going into an event and not winning a series. Like, that is unpredictable. That is not you can't even look at us in the straight face of the comments and be like, yeah, I knew New York was going to get fucking
especially when
top
their series had like six resets and they didn't get streaks back and they didn't get the offense. Like, obviously they got shit on at the event, but there was a lot of factors. We're going off kind of the common sense mentality and the fact that New York's beat the top teams that they've played. And outside of the event, they've looked stellar since the game dropped, in my opinion. And they have the record to reflect it. Two of their losses came from one weekend. And so, yeah, so going forward,
now,
and they're still frying, and they're going to match up, finally.
If New York does that shit again, where they go to the event and they get cooked, we're going to start a dialogue.
Yeah, but that's a different story. And I truly don't think that's going to happen. I think, you know.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I think this event, barring, like, the one of them have a matchup in loser semis or something, I think this event, the top four will be the top four at the event.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've spoke about it. Every week, the gap right now is massive. And even though New York aren't at their best, I still think that they're far and above like the other eight teams in the league, you know?
Yep.
So it's going to be interesting to see exactly what happens at the event. And hopefully there's not like a dodgy bracket situation. But I mean, I guess that would make it more interesting at the same time.
But as long as they all start top four seeds and they don't get upset in round one, we should see the normal, what we're predicting play out.
Yeah, that's true. The next question is from Dr. MVG94, and it's, why is Rambo not getting any mention for the poor performances of Surge? We saw how things didn't go well with Optic last season and he was forced out. Now he joins Surge, puts together that questionable roster, and then makes a terrible roster change. He's believed around the league to be this fantastic coach, but is that being brought into question with what is happening with Surge?
I don't know if anyone believes that. I'm gonna be honest, like, at least people that play are like that he's like some amazing coach. I personally don't think so. I think Rambo, as much as he was successful back in the day, he even beat me a couple times, obviously. I don't think he's like a new era player. These games are played completely different. The way that you play the game is just not even close to how we used to play it way back in the day. And secondly, he ain't even playing the game. Granted, you can sit there and grill his roster decisions and maybe his coaching. Bro, the people that he has picked up, barring some rookies, have not been good players recently. They're players that have been shuffled around teams. There have been players that have struggled on LAN. Like, especially in recent years, they haven't been good. Some people be like, well, what about Hook and Illy? Okay, Hook and Illy were on Optic, but like, they got dropped off that team. And on LAN, they were not that good in comparison to like how they were online. I still remember Hook being absurd online going into one of the majors, and then he came out and he didn't play as good. Like, they're just players, and in our cities, like, bro, I'm not even gonna roast the guy. Like, you already know, like, these teams have been, the team that you put together was shit. We never denied that.
So,
but at the end of the day, the players on that team are not that good. Wake up.
So I will say, I think Ray's issue is he doesn't resonate with the players of the today era. And I think that was part of the reason he struggled with that Optic team and why he ended up on Seattle. I think Ray is very well liked by the management of these teams. And so, you know, that's obviously granting him his coach spot, and then he's picking out a team. But I think he kind of suffers from the same issue where he's like afraid to take risk, right? We talked about this, Chris, with LAT and the squad they could have formed. They were scared to take risk. They put together kind of a recycled lineup that didn't do well. We've seen this like Hulk, Illy, Arcides like experiment. It didn't work on LAG with Hulk and Arcides. Those guys were playing the worst COD of their career, I thought. And then, yeah, they teamed up as a trio and for some reason, like, signed to the Surge. I disagree with that point. That's what they shouldn't have done from the get-go. And then to your point, yeah, I mean, just not making the right moves after the fact. And I guess my question is, how much of this is, you know, being controlled by the players, right? Like, how much influence are the players having in this decision? Because if Ray is not stepping up to the plate and making more executive decisions and these players are kind of running the show and Ray's going along with it, then that's kind of why I believe, you know, they're in the situation they're in. But again, Ray is the GM, the coach, like he is responsible and it does reflect on him. And so far, at least in the last 2 years, it's reflected on him very poorly. And so, yeah, it's one of those things as well, because Seattle hasn't said anything, right? They didn't say anything about the Illy situation. They just kind of brushed over it, picked up Rezzy, but they're not like controlling the narrative, right? So all there is to do is for the community to make assumptions about what's going on in that camp. And from where we're looking, like that camp is a dumpster fire. And I think that's, you know, your question's fair. And I think we all kind of have it. And until something comes out and they're mentioned, I think we're going to continue to kind of view it the same way. Something is going on and they're not speaking about it. And yeah, this entire franchise is in shambles. So, I think they're all responsible. Ray included.
I think you said it perfectly. I think there's some mixture of everyone that's contributed to their lack of success, to be honest. I think Ray's biggest mistake, like you already said, was just him going for the more comfort pick in terms of the players he's surrounded himself with, people that he's worked with previously. And yeah, I just think it's a weird mesh of players. And I think we knew that from the get-go, that it was a weird mesh of players. And the next question is from Rain Ops Warfare. He asked, do you think if the old Complexity team were on their primes, they would be running majors on this game against Ultra and FaZe? I feel like there's no other person to start this off at, Pat.
This is also just a hard question because it's a totally different game.
Yeah.
I think if we were playing like our Complexity team in our prime on Black Ops 2 or Ghost style of game, yeah. But if we were playing on a current day style of game, then probably not.
If skill level transitioned over game to game, it didn't matter. I would say no.
I would say I'm not being a Complexity hater. If we're playing on BO2 or Ghost, we're
well yeah, obviously. Well, that's because you guys were like really good. I'm saying, like, let's say you, like, your skill cap in those games transition over their games, I would say no. Only reason why is because we've said this before. Nowadays, you got to be able to slay and you got to be able to play the objective. And my boy Teep was a straight objective player, son. Like, he was pretty good, but like, he was an objective player. So you would have probably need to make an upgrade to keep up with the likes of the new guys. Cause bro, these submachine gun players nowadays are cooking, bro.
But it's also again, it goes back to the style of game question, right? Like, if there wasn't movement, like, I think that's a thing, like, where Teep could play straight up. And I think he would be just to, you know, be able to play as good against these guys. Again, it's one of those questions. It's impossible to answer.
Like, it's hypothetical
MJ versus
though.
LeBron. It's MJ versus Wilt. Like,
in a hypothetical world, I've seen players, like, for example, Lamar is one of those players you wouldn't traditionally think is good at like faster paced games. And even when we had slower paced games, he still had his times where he was getting fried and a lot of people were calling him to get dropped. So, like, regardless, like, I get what you're saying.
It's not so much about the pace. It's about what made our Complexity team good. And in the games that we're playing nowadays, Chris, you don't have to play perfect COD. That's the reality. Like, there's so many situations where players can make a bad play, get a two-piece, and bail you out. Spawns are super fluky and inconsistent. The interactions on a map are way more. You're playing less controlled COD and more chaotic COD. And I think that's a big deal. Strategy-wise, I think I truly believe, strategy-wise, back then, we were putting in way more strategy into how we wanted to look and approach the game than players do today. I just think today, you know, players are very talented in terms of gunfights and moment-to-moment gameplay. But decision-making and stuff like that, I truly believe back in the day, we were ahead. And then we think about, like, the mental factor. If we're playing on LAN, if you're talking about, like, my prime BO2 team playing against an Atlanta FaZe squad, like, they're already struggling to getting their own heads. Like, if I'm yelling at them from across the stage, it's a whole nother scenario. So it's one of those things. It's impossible to answer. And, yeah, we would get shit on if we came back and played, like, Modern Warfare 3 against FaZe. Like, we would get fucking smoked. And we obviously can't have the inverse where they go and play BO2 against us in our primes.
I also think, just like, this is just a separate conversation, but I personally think the way a player develops and the way, like, mindset develops, at least for someone like me, because I have a lot of longevity. I still played Challengers recently. And, like, as much as you want to say it, as much as you want to deny it, Challengers COD is still high level COD, and it's damn near close to professional COD to a degree. I feel like as a person, I got better at COD. I got better at new CODs.
But
I adapted.
Didn't stop playing. You
grinded. Yeah, exactly. I never stopped playing. So, like, everything I've learned now, if I had this knowledge back in Black Ops 2, along with my Black Ops 2 knowledge, I would literally be worlds far and away the best player in the world, right? If you think about it. So, like, if all these players kept playing and kept developing their brain and stuff like that in terms of, like, the newer CODs, and just, you learn things game to game that you didn't know before, hypothetically, they would be better than they were before. Hypothetically.
They'd be Maybe smarter, yeah.
They'd be smarter. But from a mechanic standpoint, that's different. And obviously, problem, an effort thing. It's
the problem, though, and I think this is where it comes into, like, when people make this sports comparison, it's way different because the like, game of basketball, aside from, like, a few rule changes and, like, the three-point line and stuff like that, the fundamental game of basketball hasn't changed. But, like, comparing Black Ops 2 to Modern Warfare 3 in 2024, it's Apple's an entirely different game. It's not even remotely – how you play it is completely different.
True.
And so it's one of those things that's just – it's a really hard comparison to make in Call of Duty because, you know, back then, like, Prime, we set the level for the best players in the world, right? Like, and FaZe and then Toronto, they're doing the same thing nowadays. But, like, what made you the best player in the world in those two different games are just way different skill sets. And it's a hard comparison.
On top of that, the random of, like, dude, we're watching the spawns today, and, like,
yeah, the games,
like,
they're
just not
so
readable.
Much.
And, like, you just, it makes you play completely different when you
in Black
know
Ops 2,
those
bro,
are even possible.
BO2 Hardpoint, you could go a full 10 minutes and know where the enemy is spawning
the entire time.
Yeah, you could look at the minimap nonstop for the entire game and call out where the enemy is spawning based on where the hill is, where you are, and where your teammates are, and where the enemies are. Like, you could, where you get a kill, you'd be like, all right, they're on this side of the map, you know, they're spawning here in this sector. Like, that doesn't exist anymore. It's so unreadable. It's again, it's one of those things where COD blew up. I mean, more players play COD than ever before today, and so the game is much more random. And I think that's done, right? We've seen it with skill-based matchmaking. It's to protect the player pool that is the 90% of, you know, players who aren't as talented. So a tough question, but I'm always going to say, you know, as far as back in the day, where I knew my team was in reference to the game, it doesn't matter prime versus prime. We would win on that game. We'd obviously get shit on in today's era, though.
Yeah. I think this is the next question from Reflections, actually, is, we've sort of touched on it a little bit there, but what has it been like for you all personally aging in an industry where the players typically stay the same age?
I mean, in terms of what way, I'll take it from a player perspective, because again, I'll talk about it. I played a lot and I've kept playing and I still competed even when people basically said I couldn't be in the pro league. I think a lot of it's just mindset thing. It's like a mindset change coming in from being an older like player and, just understanding the fundamentals of Call of Duty and trying to transition that to younger players. I feel like a lot of the time, the work ethic that some of the older players had back in the day is just lost within this newer generation. The amount of hours and preparation you truly need to have to become the best is absurd. Like, and there's always somebody working harder than you. Like, when it comes to just scrimming and like VOD and then actually knowing what you're looking for and then being able to basically eat, sleep, and think Call of Duty, that's what it takes to become a pro. A lot of people, especially in the challenger scene, just think it's as easy as like scrimming and watching some VOD and then showing up for practice. No, that's not enough. If you're thinking about it,
we were also doing it making $0,
making $0.
They're
exactly
doing it making hundreds of thousands.
Exactly. That's like the crazy part is like prize pools now are bigger than ever. You got to understand that whenever you're not putting in hours, there's other people that are putting in hours. And then secondly, when you're a challenger player, you're trying to catch up to these professionals. You're not like you're behind. So you need to put the work in. You need to play extra hours, whatever the fuck you're playing. I don't care if it's ranked player eights. It's all about what you take from your experiences that is going to make you a better player while still doing the VOD, while still doing the scrims, while still going over strats and like breakoffs and like little shit. That is like what separates you from becoming a professional. And that is even what separates the professionals from being better and being on a top four team. I think it's probably a culture shock. I could only imagine, like, if you were to ask this question, like something like this to like a player like Draza, or maybe a player that kind of rose through the ranks, like a perfect one would be Formal. Formal rose through his ranks so quickly in COD. He probably went from like a lower tier team onto obviously Optic and just realized how big of a culture shock it was to him to understand how different a team, like, for example, his first team ever, Fear, his first like pro team ever, Fear, worked from a team like Optic, especially with Krim on the team and how like much that guy obviously put work into the game. But like, it's the same thing.
He went Fear, then he instantly went to TK, which was the second best team, and then he went to Envy, who at the later stage of Ghost was the best team. Like, I feel like he had a pretty early run, like you're saying, all the way out to Optic, but even before he got on Optic, like he had that shock.
But that's why, that's the point. I'm more so saying like the difference in like work ethic and like strategy and just everything that you do, like your life revolves around the game. Like, and I'm sure when it comes to other sports, it's probably the same.
And I think the problem that I have, and I've noticed, like, because I've been a part of all, you know, how many other generations you want to talk about of Call of Duty, like the passion that you had to have for what we were doing back then, when it was nothing, there was no guarantees, we didn't know if you could make something out of this. Like, you had to really love it, and the hours that you were putting in were because you loved it, and you know, you were almost desperate to make something out of it. And that was kind of like the building blocks that everybody had back then. And I think that's
so
why
lost nowadays.
Yeah, because everyone's comfortable. Like, right now, you make it to the league, you know, you're locked in on a good salary, you don't have much to worry about, prize pools are insane. The only difference is it's just the top four teams are so hard to beat in comparison. My perspective of this question is a little different, though. I mean, it's like, I will never be upset at the evolution of the scene, right? Because, you know, we were playing back in 2008, and seeing, you know, how much really changed, and hell, just 12 years till we got to 2020. And then obviously the CEO era was again, much different, but, you know, I mean, that was all made possible because of the people that put in so much work beforehand. And it's not just me. Like, we're talking about, there's probably a handful of people that are still even around today that were a part of the scene back then. Obviously, Mark, you in the European camp, you've been there for a hell of a long time. Chris, I know you, me, J-Cap, like, Pac-Man's here and there, Krim, like some of these people that, and then there's like a million people who aren't, who kind of aren't getting that recognition, like the entire Fear squad, the old Envy squad, like obviously Hastro stated, but that was like, there were so many building blocks that just went, you know, just forgotten about. And it was because back then, like as you aged out, right, like you had to move on because the money wasn't there. And, you know, as it goes with anything in life, when you become an adult, when you're getting in your mid-20s, you're pushing 30, like if you can't sustain an adult life financially, then you have to kind of move on from this passion. There was an age group even before me, like even in 2008, I was still young. Like I was 14 or 12, whatever I was. And like that, there were players who were 16 and 18 and 20 back then that were doing 20s. What that, yeah, that were doing the same thing, but it's just like they got phased out because, you know, the scene didn't progress fast enough for them to stay. And it's one of those things where like, there's a lot of people that deserve a lot of credit for what went on back then. And obviously we were fortunate to kind of ride it out the whole way, but, it's been cool, right? Like, to be involved in something so early on and see where it progressed, even if you're not the one reaping all the benefits at the top where it is now, it's like, it's still awesome because you were still a part of something so early on when it was very small. Like we're talking, you know, back then, if you were to throw a stream on, like I think I got partnered on Twitch in 2010, throwing a stream on, that was still Justin TV, getting like 10 viewers was insane. Like you're seeing your Twitter grow and like, there was a big boom around 2013, 2014. Like that's when I think Call of Duty really blew up and got on the map. Like that's when, I mean, we know you were earning like tens of thousands of followers a month. And that's not happening anymore.
When I started streaming back in like 2012 with Modern Warfare 3 in that era, I used to get hype when I would have 100 viewers watching me play S&D tournaments or eights. I would hit that ad button, and some days I would make $20 from ads, and I was, yeah, that was fucking insane. Dumb.
Dude, even before that, man, like getting that first game battles check, even when you made like $20 from a tournament,
having 100 subs,
that was insane. Yeah.
Or the days where you would like win the prize money, but they would also like sometimes at some of these random events give you like a monitor or some shit. You'd get an extra prize,
yeah,
which was actually more than the prize money half the time.
Yeah, and Nate, I think, said it good. There's a TikTok clip or a clip of Nate where he was explaining like optics grind. And yes, this was like 2014, but like his mindset was like, you know, yeah, I'm getting up and I'm on an air mattress in a random house with five guys. I'm streaming 12 hours a day and uploading videos because I don't want to go work at McDonald's. Like that was the reality. It was like you make it or you're done, because at that time, you know, we've seen so many of our peers who reached that point, not because they're not skilled enough to compete and continue playing, because it just became financially unstable to do it. And that, I think, why like prize money, when we reference like the passion back then, prize money was so important, because that was what kind of like, that was the recognition that you could stay on this path. And nowadays it's a lot different. You're not playing. I mean, obviously prize money is great, but like whether you get first or 12th at an event isn't like contemplating whether you have to quit, right? Like, because the era is just so different and everyone is so much more comfortable. And I think that's why the passion of COD has just changed so much. Adam Apicella talked about this before too. Like esports in general, I feel like needs to get back to the passion, because it's great that the money has came in and it's made it more sustainable for more people. But yeah, I mean, like you were going to events, you were rooming with multiple people, people were just, you know, driving and packing their car, trying to find rides and maybe sponsors just to buy a plane ticket or whatever, because there was just so many more passionate people involved. And, you know, regardless of where esports goes, I hope that comes back, but it's hard when money is how it is.
Yeah.
Good question though.
I remember like events having like five people in one room, you know what I mean? Like five, six people.
Oh yeah. Dude.
Two people in each bed, one person on the floor. Like
it was entirely different.
Yeah.
And events were so much more fun too. Like, and I think this is the biggest problem with the CDL, is it took the community aspect away from events. Like now it's the pro matches are here. They're segregated. It's just, those go on. It's very like,
Backstage at the event as well. Yeah, like it's very separate. Like you might go to an event now and not even see like half of the pro players. You might even not even see them. They might just bounce right after they've been knocked out.
They lose and they fly home the same day. Like before that was unheard of. People were wanting to hang out and see these people. Like you had made so many connections. And I know obviously the times are different. Like we were all much younger and, you know, we developed all these relationships online and technology wasn't remotely the same, but it was something that I'm obviously insanely happy I got to participate in. And it's one of those things too where I feel that a lot of people who are joining today, it's obviously no fault of your own, but really missed out on an awesome time period in Call of Duty esports.
Facts.
And seeing as we're on this nostalgia trip, I'll just finish off with one final question. And it is, if you could go back in time in your career, what moment would you choose and why? I've got an answer to this straight away. Top of my head, leaving Toronto to join LAG. What a terrible decision that was. Holy shit.
Wait, go back in time to like fix or change
anything
or
if you want to re-experience something.
That's a good point
in your career. Anything.
Is that what it is, Chris? Is that how you're taking it? Like changing something,
take it as changing something.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm just saying so we can all answer the same.
Okay. What about you, Pat? Do you have one or no? Because I have one.
Yeah, go yours. Go ahead and go yours.
I would have never left Nogafin and co. going in from Advanced Warfare into Black Ops 3 because they obviously ended up as Elevate. I think they got a pretty decent placing at Champs, but they were a good team the whole year. And I was stuck on Complexity. No, I love the work, by the way. But it was I was with like Goonjar, Ricky, like Miracles, Nameless. Like it was like I was like having such a nostalgia trip in that game, going back to like, oh, Black Ops. Let's team with the Black Ops guys. Let's team with fucking the older heads. Nope. Should have just stayed on Elevate with all the cracked fucking jetpackers, and I probably would have had a lot more success that year and maybe turned my career around after being dropped from FaZe back in freaking Advanced Warfare.
Yeah, mine would probably be the Jetpack Era 2, and it would just be take it more serious. Because I think my problem was I didn't like the games nearly as much as I did the previous games. And I will segue this really quick to say, I think the current generation is really blessed with the fact that they haven't had, like, generational game differences, right? Like, if you think about it, we went from, like, hardcore boots on the ground for 5 years, jetpacks completely different for 3 years, and then we went back to boots, and then we went to like the slide hybrid tac sprint games.
5v5.
We've had so many different changes, and the new generation is so blessed that every game now is copy and paste.
Bro, like, we literally had games with Domination and Sabotage, then we went to games with Capture the Flag and Demolitions, like Domination and Blitz. We had Hardpoint for a year. And it got ripped out of our hands in Ghost. Yeah. When that was like the best game mode we've ever had.
I also think, Chris, if you think about it, like imagine you could have played BO2 for 6 years straight.
Oh,
like, you know how insane the run, like you guys, us, we would have made. Like it would have been the same as now. And I think that's also a problem with why, not a problem, but why the CDL is so top heavy even now, because they're playing the same game. Like whether you like it or not, the Call of Duty games nowadays are pretty much copy and paste every year. You're getting the same thing reskinned, but fundamentally, at its core, it's the same principle. You're not changing game modes. You're not changing, you know, the way these games are played.
Facts.
So for me, going back, I really wish I would have took jetpacks more serious. Obviously, I won the first jetpack event with that FaZe squad, and you know that gave me the most events in Call of Duty history at the time, and I used that and the fact that I really didn't enjoy the games as much
to justify you just kind of like sitting back
for a while. Just slacking way more. Yeah. And, you know, as soon as boots came back after Jetpack Ends, I took that first year very serious in World War II. And I had a pretty good year. Obviously, I ended up winning champs. But even in general, like I was pretty satisfied with myself in terms of the year I had. But yeah, I just wish that I took that year
Thanks, Pat, man. We could have won Advanced Warfare Champs.
We still would have won. Kidding. I was still going hard. If you just wouldn't have wanted to use a shotgun against Naga, and then we would have smoked them.
I could have had 2 rings.
Yeah. But it was more so after that fact. But whole jetpack era after AW Champs. But that would be it for me.
It was hard to take Infinite Warfare serious, though, to be frank.
That's what I'm saying. Like those games, there was so many. Those games.
That game was so horrible for like 3 months.
I obviously answered with a Toronto shout, but I think that if I'm to think back at my actual playing career, which I think is a bit more interesting, my biggest mistake, I'd say, in my playing career was always going back to the same people. And we spoke about this about...
Everyone's problem.
Yeah, like we spoke about this like with Ray, like going back to the same players earlier in the show. But like I think that's one of the biggest mistakes sometimes, going with comfort over putting yourself in an uncomfortable position. So
Imagine you could have moved to the US back then, Mark. You and like some of the Euro guys could have moved to the US and like played against this competition. Because think about it, back then we only played when you guys came to events. Like there were some of those like East Coast versus Europe like late night matchups, but like
yeah, it was shit.
Yeah, there were like challenges on 150 ping. But like, yeah. Imagine that's another thing about competition. Like, imagine you guys could have came here. Like,
Yeah, on Ghost, there was literally only two good teams in Europe, and it was us and Epsilon, and it was just terrible. We pretty much just played each other in the finals each night of a tournament. Like, there'd
random,
be a tournament every
random
night.
Random epiphany, but like our playing careers to a degree, a lot of the stuff that we talk about is so reflective of some of the opinions we have on the shows. For example, we tell these franchises and these teams all the time, they got to take risk, they got to do uncomfortable shit, they got to start picking up new players. Why? Because we literally went through the same shit, or we went back to the same people, the same recycled bullshit.
It's not just rosters. It's everything. The entire Call of Duty community was guinea pigs. We trialed and erred and tested everything for like a decade. And it's funny because I think, to your point, we have these opinions because we've seen this shit play out.
We've seen
so
this shit
times,
happen.
Whether it be formats or game decisions or league decisions, like, we've seen this shit so much that we're from a mile away. It's just like red flag, but like, please don't do this. We've seen how it plays out. Bro, history, like, it repeats itself, man. We've seen the same thing happen so many times.
Yeah. And once again, that's what I say, massive shout out to everyone that's put the comments below. Great questions this week. And that's it from us, guys. Make sure you go to prizepicks.com/reverse sweep and use code reverse sweep for a first deposit match of up to $100. And make sure you like the video, keep those good comments coming, and subscribe to the channel. We'll see you all there.